Thank you for downloading this New Zealand Sports Radio show. We have a new way that you can support us. There is a link in the notes down below where you can make a one-off donation to New Zealand Sports Radio. Thank you for support and enjoy the show.
You should celebrate yourself every day, but some days you should celebrate with jewelry. Whether you want to commemorate an unforgettable moment or just bring some added sparkle to your collection, Blue Nile can offer you expert guidance and a wide assortment of jewelry of the highest quality at the best price. Go to BlueNile.com today and experience the ease and convenience of shopping Blue Nile, the original online jeweler since 1999. That's BlueNile.com. BlueNile.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hello and welcome to the Driving Mall Show, episode 99. Wow, I just noticed that. So we're heading towards a new milestone, as you might notice. I have a new camera tonight. I don't know if it's a better picture or not, folks, but hopefully I'm looking good in my dapper best. And joining me, a man who is always very dapper, it's Stephen Harris. How are you doing, sir?
Thank you very much, Paul. I must say, you look very, very sharp, I've got to say, my friend. So obviously those extra pixels from that camera, obviously, making you look very, very nice, and that's even without makeup. But all in all, once again, a privilege and a pleasure to be on the TDM, mate.
How do you know I'm not wearing makeup? I might be. You don't know, do you?
You could be too. Hey, you don't tell me what you do in your own private life, mate. It's all good.
Hey, look, there's nothing wrong with that kind of thing. We're metrosexual nowadays, you know. Anyway, on the show this evening, we'll have a quick chat about a bit of news. We'll then do some Super Rugby and then have a bit of a chat about some club rugby, I think, because at the weekend, if you've been following our Facebook page, New Zealand Sport Radio, you'll have seen that I was at Waihi's two games this last weekend. The A's, the B's and the A's, yeah, doing the camera work for the club this evening, as well as collecting, having that real fun job of collecting all the players' subscriptions as well. It takes all sorts to keep these clubs going. And Stephen, you were out and about in Auckland catching a game as well, weren't you?
Yes, I made my way up to Williams Park in Manukau, one of the Southside clubs. Obviously, Manukau Rovers have shown some very good early pre-season form, and you always kind of knew up against Ponsonby it would be quite a challenge for the home side, but the game itself, it lived up to all the expectations. I'd made my mind up a few weeks ago that I was making a beeline south, and I was absolutely delighted I did. And of course, the weather matched the occasion as well. Some good conditions for a free-flowing game, beg your pardon.
So we'll have a chat about that, about sort of club rugby as it's kicking off around the country. If you want to let us know how your club is going and that kind of thing, then do get in touch via New Zealand Sport Radio. We've had some invites already to get to games. Stephen will be hopefully getting a free beer or two out of that next weekend when he is invited. He's been told he'll be made comfortable. So I think he'll enjoy that. That next weekend, and we'll talk later about what I might try and do this coming weekend. But heading into the news, and science says good evening, everyone. Spain have been disqualified for playing an ineligible player for the World Cup. Oh dear! Yet again, Spain get caught by this, and this time they falsified papers. I believe. I've not looked at the story in detail, but boy, oh boy, you think after the fiasco around the 2019 Rugby World Cup, that Spain would have learnt their lesson, but apparently not, and now they're out of the 2023 Rugby World Cup. Also, Hong Kong have made a U-turn and now going to be now going to take part in the qualifiers for Asia. So, yeah, still some more teams to be figured out for 2023. But fun and games in Europe around that one. And as I say, you'd think by now teams would and unions would know not to break the rules because World Rugby does keep an eye on this kind of stuff.
Paul, I was going to say, very much in and around. In and around paperwork, obviously a South African-born prop who qualified for Spain, so the appropriate paperwork obviously wasn't conceived. And to do it once is one thing, but to do it twice, really and truthfully, their administration's got to take a long look at themselves. Of course, this opens the door up for, I think, Romania, is it, Paul? To maybe have entry into the qualifying, into the World Cup qualifier, but I think it's something we should look at a little bit more.
Yeah, we'll perhaps spend a bit of the research and have a look at the World Cup qualifying in the coming weeks on this one. Yeah, Simon makes a good point that the players never get punished for this. It's only the union that does. And obviously, the other players get punished because they put all that hard work in to qualify and then they don't get to qualify because one person lets the team down. Real shame on that one. Simon points out, Romania qualified for the World Cup and Portugal go through to the final qualifying tournament or repechage, whatever they're calling it nowadays. All kind of messy. We've been talking about private investment with Silver Lake and all of that kind of stuff. The Hurricanes have sold a 25% stake to the Y11 Sports and Media Group, which is a global investment group. And a further 12.5%, Richard Mansell, who is a local boy that come and done good, has bought that. Now, Richard's investment is fantastic. It's about him and him going to the games with his dad and all that kind of stuff. So great to see that kind of investment in there. The Y11 Sport Media investment, though, a little bit more questionable, I would say, on that one. Where they've come in to say that their main aim was to develop the franchise's intellectual property and focus on global commercial rights outside of New Zealand and Australia. Boy, oh boy. I mean, we've seen that work so well. For New Zealand rugby, with the All Blacks basically getting themselves nice overseas sponsorships and concentrating on their overseas audience and not their home audience. As we see declining attendance and stuff here, let's just hope that the Hurricanes don't go too far with some targeting their overseas market. Remember, they actually need bums on seats as well. It's not always about some. Your digital audience and they're going, wow, look. I can remember seeing the head of New Zealand Rugby digital media saying how 80% or 90% of their audience was outside of New Zealand and how wonderful this was. Yes, it's good for your AIGs and your blank Altrad sponsorship on the front of the jersey, but it doesn't necessarily bring bums on seats. And some of that and keep the game alive back here in New Zealand. If there's something that Stephen might be interested in, well, because it's his blues, but I'm not sure how much Stephen's up onto his NFTs. Have you got into these digital memorabilia that the Blues are putting out?
Yeah, it's kind of taken a while, hasn't it, Paul, when you consider some of these super franchises have been around since 1996. And, if you want to start sort of collecting some sort of memorabilia, hey, maybe having done it around about 20-odd years ago wouldn't have been a bad sort of thing. So I think they're a little bit late to the party, but, hey, it's the way to go forward. You need to source your income from somewhere. And, why not when it comes to memorabilia?
So memorabilia, yes, good, but these are NFTs. So it's all digital and virtual and all this kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. So yeah, we'll see how it all pans out. What I would say, folks, is don't go buying it for an investment. don't use any money that you're not willing to lose, and you're happy to spend that kind of money on whatever the memorabilia is that the Blues are setting up. They did give a bunch away for free as well.
Paul, I was about to say I might have Carlos's sock lying around somewhere in my storage, mate.
Oh, dearie me. Let's be honest, in rugby, there are only probably about, there are only a couple of things that really are worth is the international caps are clearly worth the physical cap that players get given is obviously they're worth something. The jerseys, and then there's the occasional ball or whistle from a referee or something like that might be from a special World Cup final or something that might be worth something. But at the end of the day, most stuff isn't worth that much. But it's very nice to have as on my walls here. So I'm sure my Aliens jersey from 2009, I think it is, from the Hong Kong Tens, the winning team there, that Willie Luce took out to Hong Kong. I'm sure that jersey is worth much less than the couple hundred new Hong Kong dollars I paid for it in the first place. But hey, it was all to go towards funding that team, turning up there. And I had the disposable cash at the time, so why not? Is my comment on that one. Moving on to the women's game now. There was the Sevens at the weekend. I'll be honest, I didn't watch any of it. But some Black Ferns made it through to the final in their first return tournament, losing to Australia in the final there. So good to see them getting back to, basically back to competition more than anything else. You watch any of this thing?
Yeah, Paul, I think they'll probably be a tad disappointed that they probably missed an opportunity to knock over Australia. And they had the field position in the right place. They really only had to hold on to the ball for 10 seconds. But I think throughout the whole tournament, I think that was an area of concern for the Black Ferns. They weren't always able to hold on to the ball. Basically, I don't think they were really accurate at ruck time as well. They lost a lot of ball in the ruck, and I think that probably was their undoing in the tournament. Early in the round robin, they were lucky to just scrape out a draw with Fiji scoring after the hooter had gone. So they came back with a good win in the quarterfinal against Canada 38-0, and they beat a good French team 26-14. So they went into their final with a degree of confidence. But this Australian side is a young side, and they've got a lot of pace. And what they showed with the winning try, they pretty much went the full length of the field on the back of a few penalties, admittedly. But I think to do that, you've got to hold onto the ball for long periods, and that they did. And their lie probably is the difference between the two teams. And listen, congratulations to this Australian side. They're a young side and they're playing very, very well. Now they've brought back their coach as well. I think is it Tim Payne, I think his name is. I stand to be corrected. Very, very good coach who basically went away from Australian, the women's seven team. So they've brought him back into the fold. And I think he's also added a little bit of X factor to that Australian squad.
Well, look, three tournaments out of four that they've won now. The USA picking up the only other one. They're clear at the top of the table currently, and going very, very well. So good on them for how they're going. The win there. Finally, we've had some games announced for the Black Ferns with the Pacific Four series will be taking place in New Zealand this year, with Canada, the USA and Australia also taking part. First one will be on the 6th of May, which is a Monday, but that's the Queen's birthday weekend, so it's a public holiday in Tauranga. They have the two games, 12:15 for the Canada versus USA, followed by 2:45 for New Zealand, for the Black Ferns versus the Wallaroos. Then the following Sunday, they'll play up at the Trust Arena or Albany Stadium with USA, Australia and then followed by Canada versus New Zealand again, 12:15 and 2:45 kickoffs. And then finally, Saturday the 18th of June up in Whangarei, it's Australia versus Canada and New Zealand versus USA. That's a slightly different time there, 1:30 and 4:00 kickoffs. So great to see this annual competition actually start. Now from next year, this somehow works with the Women's Six Nations so that the games in November start to become some sort of a Nations Cup kind of thing is happening. Oops, sorry, Simon's corrected me. It's wrong. Yeah, you're quite right. The Trust Arena is in Waitakere, not Albany. I'm getting them mixed up there. Out west, not up north in Auckland. Where I actually went and watched the Oceania Sevens a couple of years ago. But there we go. That's a totally different tangent. But great to see that they've got this annual tournament now. They've actually got some games that they will definitely have every year. Good to see it kicking off soon.
Yeah, you know, this is an opportunity because, as we know, it's a short space of time on the back of what happened in that tour last year. Some new coaches stepping into the fold to help out. And time is totally against them. And I think you do need some really good, solid hitouts to critique whatever you need to get right before you take on some of the bigger Northern Hemisphere guns in that tournament. Because to coin your phrase, let's be honest, that England team, after their victory over France and taking out the Six Nations on the weekend, have basically showed they've got two or three different styles of games. In a tight game, they can basically play tight and go to their forward pack, and that's exactly what they did against the French, taking them on in the forwards. So you've got to respect the team that's got more than one or two game plans.
Yep. The Black Ferns are playing Australia in two tests, one down in Christchurch on the 20th of August, and then the reverse fixture over in Australia. I've gone blank. Actually, Australia might be first. I've gone blank. So I think it's in Adelaide or something like that from memory. But anyway, it has been announced recently. So it's good to see that they've got five proper games before the Rugby World Cup kicks off in October. Later this year, which kicks off with the Australia versus New Zealand on the 8th of October. I'm assuming that's the first game. So looking forward to that. That's all good with them kicking off. There we go, Adelaide Oval, and there might also be a midweek game in. It might be midweek one of the Bledisloe. There we go. It's good to see those games lined up.
Mm-hmm. Paul, it's actually fair to say that their warm up for the World Cup is considerably a heck of a lot better than it was for their end of season tour. If you think about some of the games they played or didn't play, should I say? I know they had that warm up game against Wales before they struck England in two tests, but if you kind of look at what's being rolled out for them pre-World Cup, I think they'll definitely hit the ground running. Whether it's going to be enough to turn their fortunes around, hey, only time will tell.
I'll put bluntly, there's never been this kind of competition for the non-home unions on the women's side of things, right? There's been the Six Nations, the Six Nations going for a number of years, outside of that, there's been nothing that leads to regular games for the women's international teams. And this is the first thing. It's a step in the right direction. I was a bit surprised it's in June and not July, but there we go. So it's going to be the same time as, so it doesn't clash with the All Blacks tests series, but it's happening on the same weekends, basically, as the semi-finals and the finals of the Super Rugby at the end of it there. Simon does point out Australia women have also got games against Fiji and Japan before the Pacific Four series as well, so that'll be good to see. Obviously, that the Fiji side will be mainly made up of those Fijiana Drua team that won the Super W over in Australia. So yeah, it looks like things stepping in the right direction for Fiji as well on the women's side of things. And hopefully they can get included in some tournaments as a national international tournament as well. Finally, I forgot to know about this, but there's been a couple of people who have been decided to chip in with three-point plans as to how to improve the game. Nigel Owens did it, and one of the things he said was, make scrum feeds straight. And I'm like, well, bloody hell, mate, you could have done that when you actually were refereeing. It's like, jeez. now you're criticising current refs for not doing it. So, mate, you didn't do it either. What a bunch of beats. Anyway.
Yeah. So, yeah, that, for me, Paul, that's the last of the problems that the game's got. Crooked feeds, if you know what I mean, just saying.
But Razzy Erasmus has come out and come with some ideas, the idea of two referees and also a specialist scrum referee. I mean, yeah, that's what we need, more referees, just to complicate things and have things.
I'll answer that one. More referees means more infringements, which means more stoppages. So, Rossi, not a good idea.
So, yeah, not on to that one. Apparently this is to stop massive time wasting around scrum. Just, mate, you are the world class at time wasting over the last couple of years. So, seriously?
I think he had more crackdown
on the shot clock for goal kickers, so they have to kick within the right amount of time, he thinks the game needs less time wasting, which is always like, mate,
there's something
bottle calling the kettle black here massively.
Yeah, I think he's having a laugh. I really do. I think he's having a laugh, Paul. He's got to be.
I wouldn't be surprised. Yeah, maybe he is. So there you go. So he's come with all these ideas as to way to speed up the game, and to have more referees. Hopefully that's a jest, because boy oh boy, that's not the direction to go in.
I know there was one. I read the article in and around what Nigel Owens has said, and there was one thing that I'm not too sure if he said it or where I read it, was just about the number of replacements. And I just wonder if we should just have replacements if there's injury, or in the case of a red card, replacement pool.
Well, first off, you end up, we've seen with Bloodgate over in the UK, that people can start faking injuries and things. So look, I don't think going back to you can only get replaced or injured works, because people just fake injury if they want to be replaced. What I would do though is say, right, you only have three replacements from a bench of six, rather than having the full six replacements.
I was just sort of coming from a place that, listen, back in the day, it really came down to the team that was the fittest for those 80 minutes. And usually, if there was one team fitter than the other, the team who was fitter would normally, in most cases, come out on top. I just sense, in the modern game, you can roll some guys out for half a game, and then basically take them off at half time, or you can even take them off earlier if they're flagging after 30 minutes.
Well, this is kind of what you're seeing with both. I mean, both South Africa and France have done with, pardon me, the 6-2 bench, where effectively you're replacing your entire scrum. Just after half time. So yes, if you've got enough good players, that can count for you. So, but yeah, I would be I think just for player welfare as well, if you make every player have to run 80 minutes, then yeah, they're going to be smaller and have to do more conditioning work rather than strength work, because there's only so much time in the day. So for me, I'd still allow you to have six on the bench, but you can only make three replacements. And after that, for players injured, they go off and you don't get to replace them. Pretty simple. That would be my one.
I'd have to think about that one.
that way, basically, you're not replacing your entire front row every single game, which is what we get at the moment. So hence, basically, props and hookers now train for 55, 60 minutes. They don't train for 80 on the whole, especially international. So there we go. We'll just throw that one out there and just as a hand grenade and just drop it and walk away. What I will do, what I have been doing, though, is looking at that one and his comment that there's 20 scrums a game. Well, there were at the beginning of Super Rugby. You can see there we had average 19.2 in round one. But we're down to sort of, we went back up to 17-ish now. But so, yeah, it's certainly dropped down a couple as handling, as teams have time to get the handling better. What's been interesting, though, on the turnover side, we're pretty much at the same level as we were at the beginning of the season. So as teams get they might get better at some supporting their players, but on the defensive side, they're getting better at scavenging as well. So that seems to have not changed. I was expecting turnovers to come down. Well, I was expecting scrums to come down. I was expecting handling to get better as the season went on, as your passes were better, and therefore we'd have less scrums. And I thought turnovers would also drop as you the support runners and the clear out would improve during the season. But I don't think we've actually seen that. All right, so we haven't seen that on the turnover side, but the scrums, yeah, the handling has improved on that one. Interesting that the Brumbies versus the Hurricanes are the fewest scrums at the weekend. I don't know what that tells us, but I just thought I would just throw that out there with just 14. I guess what you can see here, though, is that the Crusaders' handling wasn't very good, as the Waratahs got 11 scrums at the weekend. So that's an awful lot. That's a lot of knock-ons. And similarly, from the Drua, giving up 13, and also Moana giving up 12, shows you that those two teams are there. And Robbie's asking us in the live chat, can I ask a rugby league question? You can ask. We might not answer it, though, because our Wednesday night show is our rugby league show. But if it's relevant to rugby union, then we'll give it a crack.
Oh, go on, Paul. Let him ask.
Okay, go on, then, Robbie. Put it in there, and we'll have a look. But anyway, so there you go, folks. That's just some stats I've been sort of tracking this season, as I had a couple of theories. And I say one of those theories hasn't played out. The other one has to a slightly a lesser degree there. So let's get into the games for the weekend then. Stephen, first up, the Reds versus the Chiefs. With James O'Connor missing, I must admit I didn't give the Reds much of a chance with James O'Connor missing. It was 13 all at halftime, with then a bunch of yellow cards in the second, which saw the Chiefs just edge it out. For a 2-point win, I must say, closer than I was probably expecting in that one.
Yeah, it was, and by the look of it, it looked like a sort of damp, humid sort of night in Brisbane as well, which didn't make ball handling very good. But yeah, like you, pleasantly surprised with the Reds that they you know, not only went out to a 13-6 lead, I think the real key was giving up that try to Cortez Retema right on half-time. And, of course, 7 minutes of the second half, that yellow card didn't help. But to give the Reds a bit of credit, even though the Chiefs got out to a little bit of a lead, they just couldn't quite shake the Reds, could they? And the Reds will probably look at this as a bit of a missed opportunity. And of course, for them, Taniela Tupou, they'd be sweating on his injury a little bit. He's one of their big ball carriers, and
the reports are he's out for the rest of the season.
Wow. That's not just a big loss for the Reds, but it's a big loss for the Wallabies as well, Paul.
Well, we know what a season, so he might be back for internationals. That's not folks, don't go start putting money against the Wallabies straight away because of that news.
No, don't do that. We all know what an imposing figure he is on the field, and I just think once the Reds lost him, I think they probably just lost a serious amount of grunt up front. But you know, players like Fraser McGrath, he's playing very, very, very well at the moment. And, yeah, they've just been surprising me. You know, they've got a little bit of X factor with Jock Campbell at the back, and you know, Hunter Paisami, we know what a threat he can be. Listen, I think for the Chiefs, just a case of an ugly win, and we'll ride out of Dodge, take the points and come home and prep ourselves for the Brumbies.
Yeah, look, 15 penalties by the Reds compared to 8 by the Chiefs is probably the difference here that let the Chiefs get out of Dodge, as you say, on this one. The Pattaya also missing as well. So a number of players missing for the Reds. I mean, also players missing for the Chiefs, and every team's doing it. But I just don't think that the Reds really have got the capacity to cope with, have got the depth that other teams have. Look, with the amount of territory and possession the Chiefs have, they'll probably feel they should have won this one more by a few more points, but just couldn't break down a good defensive team by the Reds. Now, Robbie's lead question is, best Warriors ex rugby union player ever? So we make, that's a Wednesday question. Now, if you ask for the best rugby league player that comes to union, we can tell you. But if you're telling about players going the other way, that's a Wednesday night question. And we'll get some. We'll definitely bring that one up with Brad.
That question again, Paul. I might be able to answer that. So that's the
best Warriors ex rugby union player ever.
The best Warriors ex rugby union player ever. Well, you had the likes of guys like Mark Carter, Mark Ellis, John Kerwin. Oh man, I'd probably say John Kerwin, if you're talking about the Warriors, you'd have to say. But admittedly, he actually went to the Warriors a lot later in his career. Those are the three ones that come to mind and have changed codes. Of course, if you ask me who the guy who's probably crossed both ways and across both codes, of course, Brad Thorne is right up there. Somebody like Michael O'Connor, who played for both the Wallabies and the Kangaroos, was a pretty amazing sort of player as well, a centre. But not a lot that have really come across from rugby and made it in rugby league. There's probably players that have played at a lesser level and become really good rugby league players, whether they've been plucked out of New Zealand secondary schools or plucked from that younger age group. I see somebody like William Warbrick, who was part of the Sevens program maybe a year or two ago. I see he's just finally cracked the Melbourne Storm, so he comes to mind as well. And now Simon Hughes is just saying John Kerwin is definitely not a great league player. Yeah, I'm agreeing with that, but the question was, who was the best rugby union player that went to the Warriors? Not generally.
So it'll be interesting. I mean, Laumapi, for example, was a union player as a kid. Only played Lee when he signed for the Warriors. So he and then obviously has come back to union afterwards.
I think Paul. I think if they get caught at a young age, I think that's the key. I just remembered Conrad Harrell as well, who played rugby union for Auckland Grammar School. Also was picked up at a very young age. Whether he had a successful career, listen, hard to know in the NRL, because I think he's actually playing over in the English Super League at this stage. So I do know a little bit about rugby league, I think. others will claim he doesn't know nothing.
Most Kiwi rugby fans do. It's this English one who's come over that doesn't know anything about it. Anyway. Moving on then, and after that we had the midnight for us on Friday night. The Western Force took on the Blues. The Blues essentially won this one in the first half because they scored all 22 points in the first half and then didn't score a point in the second half at all as the Force came back to dominate that second half with all the possession and territory but could not get over the line. Got it to 18 at 22, so pretty close. Now, kicking was part of their Achilles heel, missing all three conversions. The Blues did also miss a conversion as well with this one. To basically shut out the Blues in that second half, a real big effort from them. The Blues line-out went to pot, losing 5 line-outs, which didn't help them at all. And look, turnovers won 18 by the Force and 13 by the Blues. Wow. I'm not sure either team held on to it for very long, to be honest, apart from at the very end of the game when the Force went through 26 phases, dashing away, only to turn the ball over, or to get turned over, and the Blues got out of dodge there with that one. Happy with their first half performance, not so with their second, is my guess.
Yeah, pretty much so. And even by the look of it, I'm just looking at the Tribe app. Ryan Nicholas, you'll have to update your app, because he obviously went to bed at halftime because the score still says 22-8 on the Tribe app. So he must have gave it away at halftime. A little bit like what I did as well, thinking that I'd get up the next morning and find that the Blues had won this game comfortably. But really and truthfully, it was anything but, and they were hanging on by the skin of their teeth at the end. In terms of the performances, there was the odd decent performance here. Good return to the Blues for I've got to say Akira Ioane. I thought he was very strong. Anton Cigna industrious, although he'd probably, if he could play that pick up from the back of the scrum all over again, I think he probably should have looked for some support. They would have actually walked the try in. And probably in terms of Fletcher Christie, we know how well he's been playing this season, but you've got to say probably a little bit of an off night for the halfback. Some guys will probably look back at this game and think to themselves it wasn't their best, but defensively you give them a tick in the box for getting the job done.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, "What the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass!" So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
In Papali'i, 22 tackles, 1 missed. Segner, 21 tackles, 3 missed. They both went through a massive shift in this game. You've got some Riccatelli, Tuonekafi and Retina all coming off the bench, all making more than 10 tackles in their time. So, yes. Some serious shifts, particularly in that second half. Actually, what we should have mentioned also is the that Reds-Chiefs game. Boy, oh boy, they were playing kickback in that first half. 60 kicks in this game from hand. Ouch, 60. None of the other games are going to come anywhere close to that.
Paul, I wonder if that says more about the conditions that we mentioned at the beginning. Humid, it can get very humid in Brisbane.
I've been bagging Australian commentators for talking about the dew on the ball for years, and that's an issue.
I'll be honest, unless you experienced it, and it's not the greatest at this early stage of the year. Actually, it's not that early. We're almost in May. Maybe I am making excuses for them, but I just wonder if that played a bit of a part.
We then headed over to Fiji. As the Drua took on the Highlanders in their first and only home game this season. Good crowd in there, despite some concerns over ticket prices that we kind of heard in the run-up to this game. So great to see them all turning out for this game. And at halftime, 24-17 to the Drua, they scored some scintillating tries in that first half. Unfortunately, they had the same disease as the Blues and couldn't score in the second half. Not 1 point at all. And the Highlanders came back to win it 24-27 in this one. And you've got to say, a line-out only functions at 45%, which is what the Drua had. You've got to say, That's not good. Oh, the Drua have had their Chiefs fixture in the last round relocated to Fiji. Thank you, reviewer, for letting us know that. Brilliant, that one. So there we go. We know. So two games at home this year, and that's great to see. Lineups really probably the one thing here that if the Fiji and Druid had secured those lineups, they'd have had the platform to probably win this game at the end of the day. Look, the point is, so far, every single one of these games has had a losing bonus point in it. All these games have been within a score at the end, and it's going to be the same for the next couple as well, which just shows you all this talk we've had in the run-up to this of, oh, well, it's going to be a fun first half of the season, and the second half is going to be the New Zealand teams rolling over the Australian teams. Whack-whack-woo. That is not the case.
Well, it's conceivable that some of these games, these Australian-New Zealand derbies have actually been closer than some of the actual New Zealand derby games. We're a little bit early in the season where we actually did see some one-sided blowouts. Listen, up until the last game, the biggest winning margin was 4 points, and that was the Blues victory over the Force. So it just goes to show the Australian teams have improved. Not just mentally, but also defensively as well. Probably like to see a little bit more with their attack game, but we're seeing flashes of it.
Now, look, folks, you can get my predictions on over at Patreon at patreon.com/ New Zealand Sport Radio. I got the first three right, but I'll be honest with you, I did not predict the Waratahs beating the Crusaders. Let's be honest, I don't think anybody did, even with the Crusaders missing a couple of players. So fantastic result here for the Waratahs. Massive defensive shift in this one. Look, a lot of lineouts in this game. With 31 lineouts, which is, so pretty much one every 2 minutes, nearly. On this one, the Crusaders, turnovers 14 compared to 7 by the Waratahs. They didn't really look after the pill as well as they should have done. You've got to say, this is a Waratahs team that didn't win a game last season. The fact that they are even competing with the Crusaders is fantastic. That they actually beat them with 6 clean breaks to only 1 by the Crusaders. Shows you what a massive defensive effort they put up during this game and how good that scramble defense of theirs is that shuts those things down. Pardon me. Cracking win by the Waratahs. 6 clean breaks, only 3 tries. Perhaps not as clinical as they could have been. And maybe they should have had the Crusaders out of sight in this one. I'll be honest, it wasn't really until about the last 10 minutes that I actually thought that the Waratahs were going to win this. But when they got, there was a try about, which would have been penalty try on 68 minutes, where I thought, yep, they could actually win this one. And it wasn't so much the sending off, because I thought it was a try before the penalty, but just scoring that try, to me, I thought that they were in this game and had a good chance of winning it. Getting those extra points, getting that bit of breathing room, because let's be honest, Simon Hickey still knocked over Fletcher Newell's try at the end there to make it within 3 points. Fantastic one. And the review says, the Waratahs got 10,000 for their game. However, smaller venue may look much better on the TV. Absolutely, another good and also a better atmosphere. It doesn't echo so much when you've got 10,000, as you get 10,000 in, say, a 40,000-seater stadium, it feels empty. So, absolutely, smaller venues the way forward.
Yeah, aesthetically, it looked really good as well. And, I'm pretty sure the crowd got heavily involved. And, the longer that game went and the more the Waratahs stayed in the game, the more you could hear that crowd. But, listen, this victory, make no mistake, was built on the back of a very, very good effort by the pack and some really, really good game management, especially from Jack Gordon, at halfback as well. I thought he was very, very good. And boy, we're seeing a lot of improvement too from Charlie Gamble. I mean, to say he only got about 20 mentions from Justin Harrison about how well he was playing. So, you know, he's playing very, very well. But I thought all their front row contributed. Bell, Vailanu and Harry Johnson-Holmes as well in the front row. That scrum pretty much stood up to the Crusaders, and that was an area where they had huge issues last year, Paul. So there's an improvement right there. But I think the other thing is just their game management, consistently having Jake Gordon at scrum half. He's playing some very, very good rugby at the minute, and the Australians are showing that they've got two quality halfbacks that are running around at the moment in Gordon and also Tate McDermott.
And Nick White also for the Brumbies, not doing bad. They've got a number of players there. Hi Lennox, Rovers and Ponsby. Yes, we'll be talking about that later, and we've got a couple of tries to show you as well. So do stick around for that. A number of good sort of teams there. The Crusaders losing that game does still leave them in third place. Pardon me, in the table, just ahead of the Chiefs on bonus points currently. They're on 34 points, the Chiefs on 32 points. So they're still in that top four, and I don't think you should be writing them off from winning the competition just yet. But we do know that they are more vulnerable than they've looked in previous seasons. And looking at the time, we better get shifting on to the Rebels versus the Moana. I actually picked Moana in this one, the Rebels got up 26-24, 4-point winning margin. So again, a very close game. Run meters, 680 by Moana. That's a massive number, to 329 by the Rebels. But at the end of the day, it's not how far you run. It's about getting those points on the board. The first half was all line-out mauls, and perhaps that is something that we need to get sorted out, but probably a discussion for another night on that one, looking at how we're going for time. But the red card at the end there, taking out the high shot on Christian Nealiafano, that'll be massive for the Moana if he failed at HIA and is out for a while, because Lincoln McClutchie, look, really good player, but we saw his inexperience in his youth in the fact that he missed touch with the penalty with time dead. And that just showed you that his inexperience just shone through there as he just tried to chew off too many metres.
Paul, we saw a great, great example in this game, how to activate a covering tackle, which pretty much saved the try. You know, just looking at the target area, the tackler came across, it just escapes me. Who actually made that? Who made that tackle on McClutchie? But boy, it was well activated, and I think there's probably a lesson to anybody there about just getting your target area in the right place. And for me, that was probably the moment in the game. Unfortunately, the other one also involved Lincoln McClutchie as well, after the red card, just going for some extra distance and failing to find touch. You know. Probably as a professional rugby player, you'd be very, very disappointed not to have got that penalty kick over the touchline. You know, that could have been the difference between a win and a loss in this game.
Yeah, I think they're going to need to get around him and support him on this one, because that's the sort of thing that could really, especially as if Christian Nealiafano is out, like it looks like he might be, then. And he is a starting 10. He is going to need all his confidence ready for next weekend against the Waratahs up there at Mount Smart Stadium. Small margins in this one. When Stephen's talking about lessons to learn about, so I thought he was going to say hold the ball in the correct hand. Because he had the ball in his right hand, he was in the left hand corner. If he held the ball in his left arm, then it would have been further away from the tackler. One of those little small micro skills that we perhaps don't see as much nowadays, or that is only concentrated on by the wingers rather than necessarily some of the other players. And we do increasingly see, I say increasingly, it's like it's new and it's been happening for like 10, like 5 or 6 years now, players like Dane Coles, Kieran Reid, your forwards out there on the wing. So yes, forwards, you need to learn also to hold it in the correct hand as well, away from the player. A winger's skill for many players.
Paul's coaching tip for the week.
Yes, anyone who's watching from Waihi Rugby Club, you know what we're going to be doing tomorrow night. Like they let me take charge of training. The only blowout of the weekend came on Sunday afternoon. The Brumbies taking on the Hurricanes at halftime, 16-3, and didn't look like it was going to blow out, but it did in that second half. And pretty early in the second half, really. When you think they had what tries in the 47th, 52nd, 57th minute, really was that period after half time where the Brumbies took it away from the Hurricanes. The Hurricanes were being disappointed to have gone in down 16-13 at half time. 72% possession in that first half, and yet, territory. So they spent the whole time in the Brumbies' half, and yet the Brumbies led at half time. Valentini, wow. That kick through, kick and chase, and getting his hand there was the difference, really. Again, big defensive effort by the Brumbies in that first half to keep the Hurricanes out.
Oh, listen, Paul, probably if the try-saving tackle on McClutchy in the corner wasn't the second best player of the weekend, the number one player of the weekend, I've got to say, was the kick and chase by Rob Valentini, not just to recognise there was nobody home, but also to out-sprint everybody else, including a first five Jackson Garden Bishop. Probably wouldn't want to see the replay of that tape ever again, especially when you consider the other guy who almost beat him to the touchdown was Xavier Nemea, who was the starting loose head prop. So listen, he was huge in this game. This was Valentini's game. He is really on top of his game and just showing that he could develop nicely into a real world class number six.
Yeah, absolutely. And perhaps the most underrated player in Australian rugby at the moment is Simone, the inside centre, leading the tackle stack, 17 tackles, more than any of the forwards, with only one miss in this game, as well as carrying it up and distributing. There's a player that was leading tackler last weekend when the Brumbies also got the victory. So two games against two New Zealand teams where he's been top tackler. And he's in the backs, which shows he's so key to this team. I'd say perhaps with lots of focus on players like Hunter Paisami, Perezi, I've gone blank as to the player who's over in Japan.
Karevi.
There's lots of, Simone is doing a very good job under the radar in the centres down. I wouldn't be surprised to see him in the Aussie squad.
Big and direct as well. He takes the ball into contact very, very hard. Same with Ikitau as well. But they're just developing some really nice midfielders, even from the Waratahs. I thought for Parisi, for me, has been a little bit of a disappointment this year. You know, I'm a bit of a fan of Isaiah Parisi, but I don't know if he's really captured that same form that he was actually showing in 2021. We've also got Fouquetti at the Waratahs, who's showing some really good form. And as you mentioned, Karevi as well. You throw in Hunter Paisami. Boy, at this current stage, you could argue that they've probably got some better midfield options than what the All Blacks currently have.
At 12, yes, definitely. The All Blacks are scratching around for a 12 at the moment. 13, yeah, competitive, but 12. I definitely agree with that one.
So Paul would be remiss of us once again not to mention that forward effort from the Brumbies as well. I'm really impressed with Darcy Swain, and I was really impressed with the way that loose forward trio work together. Pete Samu, Valentini, there's a good chance you'll see those two in a Wallaby jersey, in those particular jerseys. And if you throw in Hooper, that's not a bad loose forward trio. But Javon Brown also very good, Darcy Swain. And I really enjoyed the game of Lonergan. Not a big hooker, but once again, just carries hard into contact. And listen, I always look for players who, once they've breached that advantage line, what they do, how long they can stay on their feet, and how well they can present the ball.
Yep. Jerome Brown, as you say, another 25-year-old, but someone that's who I think is really, it's probably a breakout season for him this season. Or someone's going to tell me, hey, Paul, he's been doing it for years. You've just not been noticing it. But no, to me, it seems, I think this year is his year. So that rounds up the Super Rugby. Next weekend, we'll have a full round unless COVID gets in the way. But Friday night, the Blues will host the Rebels at Eden Park. So, yeah, we've got rid of the two rounds where, the Super Round was all New Zealand home games. Last weekend was all Australian home games. So now it's a mixture again. So, yeah, so Blues, Rebels, Eden Park, followed by the Reds versus the Highlanders. Boy, whilst you put the Blues together over the Rebels, that's Reds-Highlanders game will be a cracker. On to Saturday, we've got the Moana Pacifica versus the Waratahs, which I won't be at this time. It's going to be the first ever Moana Pacifica home game I'll miss because I will be at Chiefs versus the Brumbies. Wow. Third hosting second. That is a big, big game. With the Brumbies, we've got the Chiefs, followed by the Crusaders then the Blues over the next three weekends. So this is the acid test of this Brumbies side. Then there's Western Force versus the Crusaders. And then on Sunday, the Hurricanes host the Fijian Drua. Another cracking round of Super Rugby. And look, folks, as Stephen said, the biggest winning margin, apart from one game, was 4 points last weekend. It's turning into a cracking season of rugby. So, talking of seasons of rugby and seasons that are kicking off, Stephen, why don't you, you've been up around Auckland rugby a few pre-seasons and in games, but I'm going to throw on a couple of tries that you saw it was at Manukau Rovers hosting...
always had a bit of an inkling what you're actually seeing here is basically part of Ponsonby's comeback, and I was hoping Paul would get these in order, but not at the moment while Paul basically gets that in order. You're actually seeing the first try that Manukau scores, and that try was actually scored by Sailosi Vatubua, after some really, really good work to get the winger on the outside. And as he comes around to the in-goal area where I'm filming, he just goes in for the try. But I've got to say, he cut that very, very fine. I think had there been a TMO around, you can just basically see where he starts his dive in and just looked like he might have cut the line. But hey, as you can see, the referee, Anthony Petrie, he's only got the view from behind, so he gives it a try. I know I got the some of the Ponsonby coaches all asking me to see the replay. I said, listen guys, even if I show you this, there's not a lot you can do about it. It is what it is. But I suppose the lesson for Vatubua is next time just get the ball down, mate.
a little bit of showboating there. I think, look, folks, when we're watching, Stephen had that that situation. I was doing, I said, in the camera work for Waihi, a couple of the supporters next to me were like, Paul, put that up on the big screen, because they were kind of like, bits where they wanted to have replays and have a look at something. And look, the referees don't have that. And I think we complain a lot less about referees in club rugby than we do in super rugby or in professional rugby, because we have less cameras to see what they're doing wrong, to be honest. and I think, actually... replays and zoom ins and slow-mos, that's the thing we don't want.
Listen, what I love about club rugby is there are no TMOs, there are no stoppages. It is what it is. You know, you're relying on the ref, and yes, there is going to be human error, but you know, I'm not even going to call that decision human error, because nobody was really in a position to see it. And from an end on, I think if I was in the same situation, I would have given the try. But it was the perfect start for the Manukau Rovers. That try coming after 3 minutes. And, of course, their second try came 3 minutes later from a really, really good set piece. Forwards doing the work, rumbling into the 22, and a crossfield kick to the winger. That was Josh Gray, who scored. So both the wingers look really exciting for Manukau Rovers. So that basically, with the converted try, took it out to 14-0. And you thought, maybe this young Ponsonby team is in for a long day. But, you know, credit to them. They actually fought their way back in the game. That they held the ball for a little bit longer. And before you know it, they scored two tries. And by the 27th minute mark, they were pretty much back in the game. And they came back in the second half, and basically what you're seeing here is a breakout from Joel Cobb. And this is a quick winger. This is an NPC winger. But what the most impressive thing is, the cover defence coming from everywhere, everybody getting up to make tackles. That tackle, that player got off the ground, had to make the tackle, and just did enough for the player who was actually getting the last pass away, just to have thrown that pass forward. And if you watch just to the left, there's Anthony Petrie just in the perfect position to actually make a really, really good decision. Now, that was with 5 minutes to go. It just shows you.
I mean, folks, you've got here, as you say, you've got some, you're getting tries by wingers. There's some lovely handling there as well. You've seen a cracking level of rugby in these all competitions. You've got the odd NPC player thrown in there as well. If you want to get to see the non-cynical fun rugby, get down to your club. I think it's what we're saying.
You're right, Paul. You know, the crazy thing about it, I think I've said this on the show before, that South Auckland area has just got a cesspool of talent. It just has to be promoted and highlighted. I look at that Manukau.
I'm not sure that's the best word to be. Cesspool? You don't be using that.
I think people listening know what I mean. But, you know, you take, for example, somebody like a fellow Toy Penny, the first 5G, you know, this guy has got a game, and you picture these guys at another level. And I can picture them running around for Moana Pacifica. Violini Ekuasi, who played number 7, Blues under 20s, I think New Zealand under 20s as well. Beast of a man. And of course, you had somebody like Nela Matakaiono, the number 8, who, man, international size number 8, who's come back from, I think he was at Grammar Tech for maybe the last couple of seasons, a local boy as well. And it's just fantastic to see. And listen, I've got to give a bit of credit to Ponsonby as well, Paul. They were down 36-14 with 16 minutes to go, and they clawed their way back into this game. And you know, and they needed, you know, their experienced heads, the wise guy Fayanis of this world, who played well. But I was also really impressed with Sam Wai, the halfback, who scored a very good individual try in the first half. It was a cracking game of footy. I'm pretty sure these two teams are going to meet somewhere down the line. It'll be over at Western Springs, Ponsonby's home ground. But Manukau have put a line pretty much in the sand when it comes to this first round of Goodyear Tyres Auckland Premier Rugby.
Yeah, look, and I think let's just give some people a little bit of sort of context when we talk about Auckland Rugby. You have your teams like College Rifles, where I used to go play a bit of touch rugby. And above the bar, there is just a row of All Blacks and Black Ferns that have played for the clubs. That's in a very affluent part of the of Auckland. You've got your Ponsonby, which is again Central Auckland, an affluent part of there. When you think of I've gone blank. Who's the guy behind
Peter Thompson.
No, not Peter Thompson. Behind Moana Pacifica, the famous All Black Brian.
Sir Brian Williams. Michael Jones. Yeah.
Well, Michael Jones is more White Matter player, sort of out your way, right?
But, you mean for Ponsonby? Yes.
Your Ponsonby is a lot of your Brian Williams has got a very much again another history list of All Blacks, like your College Rifles. Your Grammar Tech again, a bunch of those sort of players in there. Your Marist, who again, sort of central East Auckland. I used to be able to walk there from Panmure. Those are your kind of your traditional kind of sort of richer clubs, or perhaps Eden to a bit of a degree.
I would probably say not so much richer, but more resourced.
Yeah, more resourced and more fashionable clubs in that central area from those sort of teams. Then down south, where a large Tongan community, obviously where the Warriors base themselves as well, you've got your Papitoetoe, Pakoranga, your Manukau Rovers, a less affluent part of Auckland, less well-resourced clubs. Who have traditionally lost their players to those central, more fashionable clubs. But it's great to see a Manukau Rovers who've managed to retain some of those ones in there. Then you've got sort of out east. Otahuhu is also part of that crowd.
Otahuhu. Unfortunately, Otahuhu isn't fielding a team this year, but I believe some of the players have gravitated to East Tāmaki, maybe Papatoetoe. Folded into that senior teams. But I know NZ Sport Radio, I think a couple of seasons we were out at the Otahuhu Rugby Club. We went and I think we covered the East Tāmaki Otahuhu game. And, you know, once again, a lot of talent running around. Sometimes they lose their players, you know, not through their own devices or anything like that. You know, I think players are always looking to get to a better level. If you look at a holistic picture, Paul, there's a lot of Polynesian rugby players that probably end up in other provinces around the country. Like, for example, if I pull a name out of the hat, Sione Haveli, who's ended up down in Tasman and the Crusaders, you know? There is enough talent to go around.
You've got those fashion clubs at the central, your Otahuhu, East Tāmaki, Papatoetoe, Pakoranga, Manukau Rovers in the south, and then you've got those other teams out west, Waitemata, where Michael Jones has come from, but a more storied history than perhaps currently, a club that's perhaps not as hasn't quite got the All Blacks or quite got the sort of perhaps the some of the players they used to have. You've also got suburbs out there as well, Waitakere City out that way as well, and again all losing players to those more fashionable central clubs. So it'll be interesting to see how it all pans out. We'll be keeping an eye on. The competition, you've got a bit of an invite for next week, soon.
Yes, I'm heading along to take in the Grammar Tech East Tāmaki game at Ōrākei Domain, playing at the same time as the Grammar Tech women who are playing Papa Kura, I believe, on Saturday. So I'm certainly looking forward to catching up with Shane Velzen. Who's involved with Grammar Tech on Saturday. Could be a fun day. Weather's looking really good. And, you know, no matter where you are around Auckland, if you're a little bit frustrated with the professional game at the moment, and TMOs are doing your head in and officials are doing your head in, head out to your local rugby club or just basically check on either the Tribe website or the Tribe app or the Auckland Rugby Union website, and that'll direct you in the right direction. Or even if you're on the North Harbour, head over and watch a bit of North Harbour club rugby as well.
Yeah, Grammar Tech women coming off the back of a 0-102 loss to Manuera at the weekend, so ouch. It looks like they may have a midweek game as well.
Yes,
on Wednesday.
Yes.
So yes, to have had a game last Saturday, then Wednesday and next Saturday, wow, good luck ladies. That is, play welfare. Hello, goodbye.
Training will be light this week.
Training will be very light this week. Yes. So good luck, ladies, for all the women who are playing in the Auckland Women's Premier competition. Playing three games like that in 8 days is a tall ask. On that one, as I say, I was down at Waihee where we had our first game for the A's. Who got a close win, 20-12 over Wangmatā last year. Both sides mid-table teams from last year, so a good win for them. The Bees, 39-14 over Mercury Bay, or or Fitzianger, for those of you who don't know the area, had a had a good win there. This coming weekend, it looks like our Bees are playing in Tiamutu against Cobras, and then our A's are playing in Waihu straight afterwards. Now, it's a 5-minute drive between the two games, so I might see if I can video both of the games. But as I say, we'll require a quick exit from one game, and I might miss the opening moments of the A's there. But that's the kind of thing that I think the people who are supporting or not supporting, who are giving to these clubs to keep them going, volunteering, we have to do sometimes is to dash around between different grounds to try and make it happen. And I would say unions, please allow teams to play, A and B teams play at the same venue back to back, so that A, the support can carry over and you can watch each other's games, but B, managers, physios, video people can also cover both games as well. So we'll be involved with that this weekend. Before I say I'll then be quickly getting into my car straight after that A's game and driving to Hamilton to catch the Chiefs versus the Brumbies. So three games for me on Saturday in the flesh. Probably one more than you, Steve. Make it a change that I'll get some more games than you.
You probably will, Paul.
In that one. Anything else that you want to have a quick chat about?
No. I think we've covered everything. Like I say, just looking forward to getting out to Ōrākei Domain on Saturday. The weather forecast is looking good. Can't wait.
Head over to patreon.com, NZ Sport Radio, to support the channel. You'll be seeing on sort of Wednesday or Thursday, I'll put my predictions up for this coming weekend. Also, last week I asked Clayton McMillan what he thought of the idea of players getting fined for cards. So he gave me his answer to that one. I also asked him what it's like training with 27 players on tour. So clearly can't run 15 on 15. Again, become a patron and I'll be posting that video up there so you can see one of the head coaches in Super Rugby thinks of John Kerwin's idea of finding players and also about that training side of things. So do catch us at 8 p.m. every Monday night for the Driving Mall show, Wednesday, 8 p.m. for the Sandals show, and catch you all later.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.